I think that all of us share a deep desire to be useful, to be used by God's Spirit to help change the world from hardness and coldness and cruelty, to make it be a little kinder. I think our desire is to be able to hear God's voice, feel God's presence more closely in our lives. And to this extent, Lent is really good news. It can be a time that ushers in a deep joy of becoming more useful, hearing and responding to God more intimately, being able to be present more to our own hearts, to God, to the desires for justice. Lent can help us do that. So this morning, I'd like to take a look at the temptation story, the wilderness. Not so much focusing on the various temptations that Jesus had, but on the wilderness itself. Why wilderness? Why does Jesus go there? What function does wilderness have in the story, in our lives, in Lent? So there's a pattern, but before getting to the pattern, I just want to touch briefly on the story in Genesis. It's come down to us that A, the woman is responsible, and B, that the biggest temptation is desire for something pleasurable. That's in the story. It's not just the woman who's responsible, both the man there was, and he may have gotten the message wrong when he communicated it to Eve, and so kind of confused her a bit. But there's something else. The primal pair saw that the fruit was good to make them wise. And I think about our calling and the task before us. God knows we need wisdom. I think of that primal pair in the garden. They're finite. They have a task that God has given them, and suddenly this eloquent thing appears before them, who seems to know God better than they, who questions what God is saying and God's motive, begins sowing doubt in their own minds. And I wonder if, in the midst of this, they may not have felt like you and I so often feel. This is a big world. The task before us is great. Do I have what it takes to meet it? I need wisdom. I'm scared. I'm lonely. I'm afraid. And here is the offer of something I need to do, something that God has called me to do. That's the devil's bargain. Ever get caught with that? Ever hear politicians say, I need to get to have a seat at the table so that I could do what I need to do to make this world a better place? And to get there, I'm willing to compromise whatever it takes so I can be there. I think, faced with their own finitude, faced with their lack of wisdom that they felt, falling for what the snake said was quite simple. Once they did, a hole got carved inside of them. Shame and death and alienation, the very things that we prayed forgiveness for at the beginning of the liturgy. I think of a line from Seamus Heaney that says, human beings suffer. They get hurt. They get hard. After the fall, things have gotten harder and harder. And the hole that gets carved in each of our hearts because of the pain that's there, the hardness that we defend ourselves with just to stay alive, the shame we may feel, the guilt, the sadness and sorrow. That hole, those holes inside of us get filled up, as one of the songs that Mumford and Sons sing, that there's a hole within the fragile substance of our souls, and we fill that hole with things unreal, and all the while our character it steals. So the hole that we have, because we've been hurt, and we've hurt others, the whole of our own finitude, the whole gets filled with all kinds of stuff. The atmosphere of exclusionary vapors that we breathe, the alienation that we live, the dreams that we have of getting to the top and how to get there, all participate within the realm of the powers and principalities that promise life, but give something so differently. The voices in the air, the things that distract us, all those things that we fill the hole with, or paper that hole over with kitchen linoleum, or whenever we confront that hole, we flee and run, and all the while, our character it steals. And all the while, that hole becomes festering ground for the very things that Satan, or the voices in the air, or the voices in our head, exploit to do the devil's bidding. And it's for this reason that the wilderness is important. I want to go back to the wilderness that Israel faced. They had gone through the Red Sea. God's Spirit leads them into the wilderness. Why? Why there? Wasn't it enough to get out of Egypt? The answer is no. It's one thing for Israel to be delivered from Egyptian oppression. They're free now. But the years that they spent in Egypt entered into them. Their imaginations were colonized. Their hearts were occupied. Their dreams were shaped and formed, and so were their desires. It took 10 plagues and a crossing of the sea to get them out of Egypt. It took 40 years wandering in the wilderness to get Egypt out of them. That's the goal of the wilderness, is to get Egypt, the powers and principalities, empire, whatever we want to call it, to get those habits that we've practiced and learned and have inhaled and inhabit out of our imagination, out of our bodies and souls, so that we can become freer to be present, to be here. Our calling, yours and mine, is to be here. I think of Isaiah when he's called, Moses when he's called, Mary when the angel appears to her, they all say the same thing. In Hebrew, Hineni, I am here, be it to me according to your will. I am here in the midst of this world. I am here in the midst of pain. I am here in the midst of prosperity to do your will. To be here, that's the goal of the end of the Lenten journey, the end of the wilderness, to be present to God's voice, to be present to God's reign, to be present to the wells of compassion and love inside of us so that we can be healing agents and be healed ourselves. Does that make sense? Okay. What happened in the wilderness? Here's what Israel experienced. They just crossed over the sea. Miriam sings a song. God has triumphed gloriously, the horse and rider thrown into the sea. And then three days later, they're wandering through the wilderness, 3 days, no water. And they begin to complain. They find water. The water is undrinkable. It's bitter. What do we do? God gives them water to drink that's pure and says, trust me. You'll be in places that are going to seem strange and dangerous, but trust me. Don't complain. Well, they got the water. Now, chapter 16, after 15, 2.5 months after they left Egypt, they're getting hungry. There's no food. They murmur and they say, if only we had died in the land of Egypt when we sat by the flesh pots and ate to our fill of bread, for you have brought us into this wilderness to kill us all with hunger. No food. They complain. Moses goes to God. God says, manna. So manna comes. Do you know what manna means, the Hebrew word manna? It means, what is it? They've never seen it. What is it? But God feeds them with what they couldn't imagine before to sustain them in a place that they hated to be. God fed them. Then Exodus 17, no water again. And then giants and huge kingdoms and Amalekites and Girgashites and Jebusites and all that would try to destroy them. What the wilderness is in these stories is God takes them to the place of terror. Nice of God to do, isn't it? Takes them and us to the places that we fear, to the places that of disorientation and insecurity. How will we stay alive here? What will we use? Will we use what we learned how to survive in Egypt? Will we play the game of Pharaoh? Will we use domination and power and violence? Will we use deceit to get to where we need to be, to get a seat at the table? God takes us to those places that crack our hearts open, crack open the defenses that we have. And what we do when that happens matters. Israel didn't do a very good job. Israel's kings didn't do a very good job. The church hasn't done a very good job. Jesus did. During the 40 days that he was fasting, he stayed present to God. He stayed present to the pain or whatever else it was that was carved up inside of him. Not only do you and I need to have Egypt taken out of our hearts, but we need to have God's compassion and kindness brought deep within us so we can feel it, so we can be it in the world. Here's a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye. Called kindness. Do you know it? Naomi is a Palestinian American, and she writes, "Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things, feel the future dissolve in a moment like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you have counted and carefully saved, all this must go so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out the window forever. But before you can learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, how he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the deepest thing inside. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows, and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for. And then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. In the midst of a world that's grown hard, we're called upon to be kind. Doesn't kindness move you to tears? It does me. But to be kind, we have to go to those places that we flee. I remember coming home one day when Nathan was much younger and living with us. He had a really bad day. I have his permission to say this. He had a really bad day, and I did what I do fairly well. I tried to problem solve. and tried to ease his pain. And he yelled at me. He said, no, I don't want you to fix my pain and my problems. I want you to be my dad. And I realized it's like the light came on inside. My heart was broken by seeing his pain. But my response was also trying to fix it so that my broken heart wouldn't hurt so much. And as pain and grief and sorrow are wont to do, they catch on to each other, dragging into the present previous griefs and sorrows and pains and making the world seem overbearing. No wonder we want to shut the door. No wonder we want to fix the problem. But if fixing the problem does it in a way that we don't stay present, that we are not hinei-ni, present with the person, what good does that do? Kindness gets lost in technocratic problem solving. The journey in Lent, as the Spirit takes us into those terrifying regions of our broken hearts, our wounded desires, and the stuff that we filled it with, and says, let me free you a little bit more of that. And instead of feeling guilt and shame, this is a judgment of grace. This is meant to set us free. This is meant to let us feel God's love deep inside so that we can be God's love in the world. It cracks our hearts open to let the light in so that through those cracks the light can come out into the world. This is a journey that helps us be better participants with God in mending a broken world, in stitching a fragmented humanity back together again. Maybe in seeing justice roll a little bit more and righteousness flow like an everlasting stream. I'll close with this. In parts of our liturgy, not today, but in the Anglican Church, we do Lent and try to observe it faithfully so we can celebrate Easter. Yes, celebrate the Passover well. And that's good. But if, when Easter comes, we put Lent aside, there's a temptation to forget the lessons that we've learned, to stay present to the pain long enough until we are changed at deeper levels. And then if we celebrate Easter just to get rid of the Lenten stuff and have chocolate again or whatever, what will change? We get back to life and things and living things and things we understand. But is the world changed? The harrowing of the Lenten experience is to transform us so that we can be transforming presences. So may God give us grace to have a good Lent, to be freer, to breathe more deeply, to be present, to practice hinei-ni, for God's sake, for the sake of this world. Amen.